Welcome everyone to another episode of Deep Dive. We are doing a cross-border episode. Kind of. We're just talking about Singapore and Malaysia.
Yep. Our favorite topic.
Yeah, because we love to drive to JB, right? I know you do.
I don't drive.
You don't drive? Okay, but you love going over there, like.
Of course. Which Singaporean does not?
Okay. And what do you do? What's your, like, the main thing you do when you get there?
The starter pack, you know.
Starter pack.
Which we all do. We go there to shop, you know, maybe get a massage, eat. Yeah, all kinds of things. It's fantastic, actually.
Okay. Because you feel like you're always getting a serious discount on everything that you do over there.
No, not so much. But, you know, just generally, it's just, you know, a nice way to spend the weekend
with your friends or your family. It is rather a chill environment over there.
It is.
Okay,
it is.
So that is Johor. And, of course, with Singapore, the Causeway is a big thing. In fact, we have a CNA documentary called The Causeway because...
That's right.
It's the busiest land crossing in the world, I found out.
Indeed.
Over 300,000 people use it every day.
Yes. Because of all the reasons
I you know, okay.
Yeah, so it's safe to say our culture, you know, our economies are quite tied together, right?
Same but different.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
And so we thought, why not hook up with them?
Kind of,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Start this relationship because we got together once, we broke up, didn't work out, but we're trying it again. This time we're reuniting for what is the Johor-Singapore Special Economic Zone.
Yes, the deal was signed recently during the leaders' retreat with PM Lawrence Wong and PM Anwar Ibrahim. It's almost like a marriage, Steve.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we just hope that, you know, it's a union that benefits both of us.
Hopefully we just get along, stay committed. Don't get divorced.
Okay, but like all marriages, they're bound to be bumps in the road,
right?
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, so that's what we want to discuss today. Let's start with you, Dylan. Okay, your challenge is to explain it to us in simple terms.
Sure.
Why do countries get into negotiations and commitment for special economic zones?
It's to overcome some of the natural frictions that there are. You know, I think... Everyone knows that, you know, having this huge, you know, hinterland right next to Singapore is a great idea.
But,
you know, you've got good land, you've got, you know, competitive labor, you've got energy, but accessing it has had a lot of friction. The cost of accessing has been quite high because of the border, because of, you know, the different regulations and things like that. So special economic zones around the world kind of make sense when you have these sorts of frictions, and special economic zones are a way for countries to overcome some of these frictions and make it easier to do business.
So we wanted to check what's in it for Singapore. That's what a lot of people are asking, right? I mean, economists are saying that Singapore is quite a developed country. You know, we are at capacity and very high value, very costly to do business. So what's in it for us?
I think quite a few things, actually. So, I mean, I think you need to think about what the motivation is and also look at, go back a little bit in history and look at, you know, this is not the first time Singapore and Malaysia has tried to do something like this. You had Iskandar Malaysia. That was the last iteration of this. And that didn't necessarily, you know, reach its goals. And part of that was because at that time, the whole business model was for Malaysia to attract manufacturing from Singapore, as well as some of the housing demand from Singapore. And they thought they could do that by having this special zone. But it was not in the best interest of Singapore at the time. Singapore was also trying to build their own high-end manufacturing. This was after the global financial crisis, so they were actually trying to attract a lot more wealth, so the property sector was doing quite well. So there was no business case for Singapore at the time.
Okay.
Now, dial up to today, you actually have a very strong business case. Singapore is now transitioning into much higher-end manufacturing, much more disruptive technologies like AI, which need factories and, you know, a lot of space, but you want to keep those industries that Singapore has built from at a cheaper cost point. So, you know, you can, there's a business case to move some of that. There's also a tightness in terms of the labor market in Singapore, the accessibility of labor. So again, you have a business case to kind of export some of that labor issues somewhere else. So I think that's one of the key motivations, and I think that's what's in it for Singapore.
So you're saying that the situation has changed for us, right? I mean, not just economically, but also globally, right? Because of the US, China superpower rivalry, so to speak. So it's like somebody, I mean, I read something which says that we are hitching, you know, or Malaysia and Singapore are hitching together, you know, to try and mitigate against some of that. Serena, what do you think, from where you look at it?
I kind of look at it from the Malaysian point of view. I'm one of those 300,000 that commutes every day to work.
You come in every day?
Do you live in Johor?
I come in every day. Yeah, I live in Johor. So I come in just when I have class and lectures. Mm. And I live on the other side. But I don't live in JB. So I live in Iskandar Puteri where the data centers are.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and we do have some Singapore industrial parks there. From the Malaysian point of view, it's always been that there is the hinterland, right? So Malaysia has the space. And now we need to look for the energy and the water that can support these data centers.
Right.
But we've always wanted to not be just the backwaters of Singapore.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity, especially with the Sultan as Agong, to lift Johor up, you know, to be almost equal with Singapore and develop as well as Singapore.
Mm.
So there's that benefit. All our shopping malls are full of Singaporeans. Yep. So if this SEZ makes it easier for Singaporeans to come, that's great. I mean, we already have QR codes, you know, the e-gates. It's so much faster.
Yeah, yeah. The infrastructure is being built to support that, you know.
And then collaborations in terms of business. When PIPC, the Pengerang Petroleum thing came up, on Desaru side.
Right.
That was the whole goal. It was for Singaporean businesses to send maybe, you know, small and medium enterprises would set up small shops in Johor to service either the Petronas, the big industrial things here, or Singapore industries that need more space would come over to PIPC. Mm. So, this is actually a continuation of that as well as what it was before with this kind of
The way you explain it, it just makes sense. You know, there are certain needs that we have in Singapore which could be fulfilled in Johor when we have this relationship. At the same time, there are certain things that Malaysians want that we can also give. So it does seem like win-win. But I'm sure years ago when we first started with Johor or with Malaysia and other areas, we also thought the stars were aligned then.
Mm. It actually started with Sejori. So initially it was Singapore Johor Riau. And this was a regional tie-up.
Right.
And so the idea was, you know, Riau would have the ports and all of this.
But my question is, why are we more certain that this time it will actually work and work more effectively?
You need the political push to make it work, right? So right now it's a good time because the Johor Sultan is Agong. So you have that top-down push.
Sure.
Anwar is behind it because in the past there were political obstacles that prevented Johor from being, say, as good as KL, for example.
Mm. Then there's also the big question, what happens when power changes hands?
Yes. So the word on the ground really is do everything now. Get it all set up as fast as possible so that when power changes, it will still continue because businesses would have transferred. Johor is really getting there.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. The development in Johor is amazing.
Yeah.
You can see that things are moving. That's why immigration has gone a lot faster. That's why infrastructure is actually speeding along much faster than before. There is movement on the ground.
Okay.
If you live in Malaysia, you can see it.
Change. But I feel like we can't deny that there might be deep challenges. Culturally, we're quite different.
Yes.
You know, in terms of this kind of thing, you need to negotiate, like, okay, who pays for what? You know, how do we decide our tax breaks and our incentives, who gets what, you know, that kind of thing. And we could run into problems. I mean, we've run into problem before. So what do you think might be the sticking points?
Let me put it this way. 140 countries in the world have special economic zones, and most of them end up not actually meeting their initial mandates.
Okay.
So it's the path to success is very, very narrow
with
special economic zone. It's even bigger now than at any given point in history because there's an external factor that is also there, which is Donald Trump. We've had an economic system that was driven by international trade, international agreement. Now we have a system that is becoming more and more bilateral. So for a lot of countries, it is important to have your own value proposition to attract investments.
Right.
And an economic zone like this, you know, where you have Singapore's financial center and logistics center with, you know, Malaysia, with Johor's, you know, land, people, energy,
water is a
fantastic proposition, even from a ASEAN, rest of ASEAN point of view. Right. Mm. So for a lot of companies who are looking to move, this will be a great place to move, especially from North Asia. So you've got location and you've got a business case.
Okay.
So then really the sticking point comes down to policy.
Yes.
And whether we can actually have consistent policies. Now, what we're seeing is, unlike the past times, because you have both governments really, really engaged to make it work, and there is interest on both sides to make it work. For Singapore to reduce the cost pressure, for Malaysia to drive economic growth, particularly in Johor, there is an alignment. And we've seen how quickly some of the incentives have already been announced, right? I mean, you've got the 5% corporate tax, you've got the 15% income tax. All of that has already been announced. And so there is some clarity in terms of how they want to go ahead.
Right, right.
So I think the reality is, you know, you've got two very stable governments on both sides, and who both got competing but also complementary needs for their own people.
Yeah.
And I think I think the SEZ kind of fulfills that.
So you need to, you know, join forces in order to make it work. So the intent is a lot stronger than
Absolutely.
Before, is what you're saying. Okay, but Serena, you know, one of the things that, you know, has come up is that we keep hearing this, that talent, especially like high-skilled talent, is quite tough to get. You know, in Malaysia.
So when you were talking about what would the problems be, I think it's interesting that perhaps Singapore would like to move some of the businesses to Malaysia because they think there's a pool of talent.
Yeah.
But then Malaysian talent is all working in Singapore because the dollar is three times more. But, you know, there are steps to work around that. Republic Poly, for example, has just announced that it's working with Johor Skills.
Mm.
And Johor Skills is something that's recently set up to make sure that staff, that manpower in Malaysia is trained, and, you know, there's capacity building going on. So that was specifically set up with a view to the SEZ.
Mm.
And of course, Republic Poly benefits because they're involved and they're going to help with the training. It's going to be certified by the Malaysian HRD authority. So it's like human resource development. So the companies can pay for it. So there is work on the ground to make Malaysian capacity able to cope with the opportunities that might be coming.
Yeah.
But
they've
also announced
a higher, lower minimum wage for Johor in certain sectors.
Mm.
I don't know who's going to be able to pay that amount. 4,000 and 6,000 is a minimum wage in certain sectors.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to draw people back from working in Singapore.
Yeah, so I've read that it was meant to like stem the brain drain in a way.
Yeah.
But it depends on who wants to take that. I've had this discussion before. I think for a young person who's just graduated, perhaps not in the relevant sector, it is still a lot more attractive to come across and work as a cleaner.
I mean, like, you've got poly students, For example, who are Malaysians, who
graduates,
come across,
degree holders, who come across
and
work as cleaners.
If you look at
if
you look at the SEZ, it's new. It hasn't been built up yet. And someone offers you a job there, you're thinking, no track record, the pay is okay. I don't know whether
you could
this
make more in Singapore,
project is going to survive, you know?
Yeah.
So if I'm given a choice, I probably want something more stable in Singapore, right?
It depends. So of the commuters, the ones who might want to stay in Malaysia instead of coming into Singapore because it's tiring, it's a very long time on the road. If they've done it for a long time, they've already paid off their debts, they've got children, they want more family time.
Yeah.
So I would say the people in their 40s and above, they might come back.
So there is a demographic for that.
And they have the skills. They would be more mature. They would fit in this kind of sector. They would get additional training if they need it. From
and their needs
programs
are different. They may have paid off their home loan already. So they don't mind taking a bit of a pay cut and avoid the
daily
commute.
But they have more
time
with family.
Yeah.
So that makes a difference.
Look at some of the investments that are already going into Johor, right? Some of the data centers. You've got Microsoft, you've got Oracle, you've got global multinationals who are going into Johor. And I think what you're going to have is more and more multinationals globally looking to set up operations there, right? You know, UOB has said they want to set up some middle office.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's not... So it will be a much higher skilled worker that will be required in the zone. And I think the salaries, I know that, you know, they're saying 4,000, 6,000. I think the salaries
minimum.
Which I think could actually be higher.
Right.
So for now, it's huge for fresh grads.
So I think because of the talent requirements for a lot of these multinational businesses, I think these salaries can actually be higher. And if you actually look at, there's another category, which I think a lot of people don't talk about, is actually not the Malaysians going back, but actually Singaporean PMETs.
I was just going to ask you.
Because you actually have a situation where if you want to hire someone with you know, regional or global multinational experience to manage businesses, the best place to get them is Singapore, who has been doing that for, you know, decades.
Yeah.
So you actually might have opportunities opening up for more Singaporean PMETs to actually go across the border.
Yeah. It's convenient, right? Because one of the things that, you know, we always hear is that Singaporeans don't want to venture too far. You know, they don't want to give up the comforts of their home, etc. But this is ideal. Let's come back to this growth targets, right? Help me understand. Initially, they had said that, okay, we are not going to do a model where we build and then we will, you know, get the investment. So now they've got the people, they've got the business agreement first, like all the MNCs, and then they start working on the infrastructure. Do you think that's going to make it a little bit more successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think if we look at the, again, the Skanda example where it was the expectation was build and they will come.
They didn't.
So I think this time around, I think we are also in a situation where I think industries are very different, right? The industrial needs are very different, right? You know, what you need for an AI data center or a North Asian high-tech manufacturing to relocate, the what you actually need is very different. So, so you need to be very clear as to what sort of infrastructure you need.
Yes.
And I think that's the approach that the current iteration is taking, right? So first, get the policies right, get the incentives right, make businesses come and invest. And anyway, once you actually say you're going to invest, from the investment announcement to actually getting it done takes years.
Yes.
You know, so then you build the infrastructure and the community and everything along with it. And that actually will create, scale.
Right.
Over time.
But I think when you talk about infrastructure, the difference between now and then when IRDA first came up is that when IRDA, the Iskander Regional Development Region, thing, when it first came up, there was nothing. So Iskander Putri, where I live now, already has infrastructure. So we have Madini, we have Iskander Putri.
Yep.
And this was built a long time ago when the first round of this plan appeared.
Yes.
People didn't populate. But now we already have the infrastructure there, as in roads, piping, so electricity. It's a lot faster.
Yeah. And jumpstart
and
the process.
Iskander Putri is the best planned area in all of Johor Bahru. And it was built with a view to accepting these businesses.
But he may be thinking, should I go? Right? And he's looking at all these factors that you've mentioned. Sure, it's kind of there, but I'm probably going to wait, let others do it first.
I think the difference with Johor, with the rest of Malaysia, is that Johor has its own civil service, which means no matter who is in power at federal, if Johor has already decided we're going to do this, and remember, it's always wanted to work closely with Singapore, but it had political obstacles.
Yeah.
Now the doors are open.
Okay.
So no matter who takes power the next round at KL, in KL, Johor's going to run with it. Because the civil service in Johor has always been stable. You cannot compare to Singapore's efficiency, but Johor has put Singapore as the benchmark. And so we see also that the Johor civil service is constantly going through development rounds. Like the staff have to step up hugely. We've seen it. I mean, if you live there and you have to deal with it, you see it. There is improvement.
No, I see it. You know, I was talking to Steve earlier before we started that I take the bus and then clear immigration. I see the changes.
Yeah.
You know? It used to be so much slower, right? Because it was all manned by people.
Yeah.
Now it's electronic. So it's just as fast as the Singapore side on a good day.
Yeah, just don't go on a Friday evening.
Exactly.
That's just
the don't weekend. Do the weekend. On the,
during the rain.
I read that, for example, Old Chang Kee might want to set up a factory at the SEZ. How would they benefit? You know, I mean, I assume they have production facilities here. Obviously, it'd be cheaper. So to me, that's the kind of first thing I think about. Is there more to this?
So all their curry puffs will be made there and then sent to Singapore, right?
Yeah. Korean bakery that's in City Hall on the ground floor. They have a factory in Glampata because I drove past and I was like, hey, why is it here? It's a factory. So I suspect they are already producing in Johor, in the capital land.
Yeah.
Nusatech, whatever it's called.
So manpower intensive kitchens, things which require a lot of,
which
are labor intensive, right?
And near enough lorry to lorry over, right?
That's
Because in Singapore, reality, we eat rent, right?
That's quite a
large chunk of that.
Yeah.
Plus the manpower costs, you know, especially if you're small businesses, you know, you've got the DRCs in terms of how much foreign workers you can have. So there's quite a few things that actually constrain you to get scale. So if you can do it faster and cheaper across the causeway and still be able to, you know, move without the friction.
Makes sense.
So, and you can also then control cost as well, right? Like your cost price, because we always complain about things being so expensive. So, I mean, if you can produce it.
With economies of scale. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And any concern that this is going to make for the Malaysians living in Johor, they'd be like, oh no, this is going to make things more expensive for me now.
The Singaporeans are coming.
That's already happening. That's already happening. And like house
all
prices in
JB. So often, right?
The roads are jammed. So all the house prices in JB, this has been a thing recently, right? Okay. It's through the roof and Malaysians cannot afford it. Or Malaysians have to buy further away from JB town. You know, so this is the thing. The realities for the Malaysians are a bit more difficult.
Okay.
In that sense. But then why would a Malaysian want to buy a tiny unit in RNF when they can buy a house slightly further away?
Yeah.
But not in the city center. Okay. So again, it's what do you want and what do you need?
Singaporean companies moving to Malaysia will be a component of it. But I think the bigger component will actually be global companies and regional companies coming to Southeast Asia in the first place, and then to Singapore and Malaysia as one of the first preferences. So it's actually a much broader segment of companies who will actually move.
Because they can look at it and go like, now I can put my head office in Singapore, but I can have most of my work being done from Johor.
Your launch pad is Singapore, and you raise your capital in Singapore. You use you use the logistical links out of Singapore, the IP protection of Singapore, and then you have the base
of your production
in Malaysia.
Sounds good. The target in the first 5 years: 50 projects, 20,000 skilled jobs. What do you think, Serena?
We've had a lot of data centers, more than the target. The data center entry has been phenomenal.
Mm.
So who knows? I mean, if you've got big names like Microsoft and Oracle, that paves the way.
You optimistic?
Yeah, I think this time around it seems to be different. So quite optimistic.
Well, time will tell.
The banks will always make the money, right?
Yeah. Well, somebody, banks and lawyers.
Banks and lawyers. Hey, but you know, we could get a retirement home there. Why not?
Yeah,
my second home. Come. Iskandar Puteri. It's nice.
Yeah. Okay. I'm quite a Singapore boy. I quite like my, you know, not convinced. Sorry.
Take the bus. I'm telling you, take the bus. You will
asking me to not drive
it.
Now. That's a whole different story.
Okay, thank you guys. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
For having us.
Thanks to Junaini Johari, Tiffany Ang, Joanne Chan, Arjun Bala, and Hanida Amin. See you guys next week.
Bye for now.